Norm and I'm an alcoholic. And I certainly want to thank Shorty and the committee for the opportunity to be up here and participate. Have the opportunity to share my experience, strength, and hope with you folks that I can get in another day of sobriety, too. Also have the opportunity to welcome all of the new people that may be here this evening for your first 30 days in Alcoholics Anonymous. I feel pretty sure that we've got some new people here. You know, we're moving into the light wine and beer season, and we get a lot of fallouts about this time. We all also get a lot of the Christmas holdouts that just can't make it through another summer getting in here. So I feel positive that we've got some new people here, and I sincerely want to welcome you. And if you will, why tonight try to keep an open mind, and what you can use, take it with you, and what you can't use, kick it on the chair and leave it there. There's other AA meetings, I'm sure, here in the area. You can get out and get to other meetings before you make any giant decisions about your alcoholism or Alcoholics Anonymous in general. Also, being a new person, I'm sure you're aware of the fact you've now associated yourself with one of the most unpopular fellowships in the world. You know, nobody begins his life wanting to become an alcoholic and a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because, frankly, there's not a hell of a lot of class to being an alcoholic and a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's no status connected to it, and we don't issue out pins that identify you as a 32nd-degree alcoholic. You know, there I am. Running around town, show everybody your pin, and Jesus, the town's wild. Glad you made it, man. You work like hell, Norm. Glad you made it, John. Now, that isn't what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. Matter of fact, you know, a total true alcoholic as myself, he don't want to get to AA because he's not an alcoholic. You know, the week before I came to the program, I was a heavy drinker. A victim of unusual circumstances and rotten drivers, but I sure as hell wasn't an alcoholic, and I ain't going to AA, but we resist this program, you know, right down to the bitter end. We change jobs, environments, wives, go to jail. Some alkies go clear to the end. They die. You know, man, I'd rather die than go to AA. He dies. You know? I'll show you I ain't going to them rotten meetings, and he never does. And we joke and we laugh about it, you know, but it's really, you know, it's serious business because in the Alcoholics Anonymous book, it tells us, you know, the ultimate end is the gates of insanity or death. But some of us choose to surrender. We just can't cut it out there any longer, and we come to the program and we become a survivor. And the people that are here this evening, why, we're the survivors. And being a survivor is a hell of a deal. You find out, as I did, that you never have to take another drink again if you don't want to. You find a group of people who will know most everything about you, you will still accept you. Who aren't necessarily interested in where you've been or where you're trying to go, but they're awfully damned interested in what you're trying to do today as an individual and as an alcoholic. And they told me when I come in, they says, buddy, if you want to make the program, it's easy. And if you want help, it's easy too. All you got to do is ask for it. All you got to do, they call it the nickel therapy. They said, all you got to do is put that money in the telephone, make the call, and make the call before you take the drink, and we're going to be down to see you. And I put a lot of nickels in those telephones, and I made a lot of calls in those early months that I was around, and I never ceased to be amazed because people came down to see me. People that I didn't know, people that didn't want anything from me, come down and sat there, not with pity and hate that I've been used to all my life, but they sat there with compassion, with understanding. They were guys from AA. And that's got to be the best deal I ever had in my life. And I'm a guy that looked half the world out there trying to find the best deal. You see, I never found it. Not until I got to this program and was surrounded by this marvelous group of people who would call themselves Alcoholics Anonymous. So if you're new, give yourself a break, buddy, and try and buy the package that's available to you here. And maybe the day's going to come in your life when you too can say without any reservation whatsoever, it's the best deal you ever had. To qualify that beginning statement I made, I'm an alcoholic, and I'm not by any stretch of the imagination an authority or a consultant on the program Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm an example, good or bad, that AA works. That it has been necessary for me to take a drink, steal anything, or go to jail now for 7 days, 4 months, and 25 years. I thought that up on the airplane coming up here. I'm sure nobody is impressed. But I am, obviously, or I never brought it up. And you never know, we may get a pension program going in AA, you know. And hell, if we do, I want to get credit for all my time, you see. But man, you're sitting out there new and you talk, you know, you're hearing some guy talk about a long time, you know, sobriety, a lot of years. And, you know, that... That really set you back, and I can still identify with that. I can remember sitting at that first AA meeting. I was 29 years old, and I'm sitting there in that first AA meeting. I'm 54. He's trying to figure it out. Yeah. But I'm sitting there in that AA meeting, you know, and this guy's up there talking, and he says, I haven't found it necessary to take a drink, steal anything, go to jail now for 9.5 years, and I damn near fell out of the chair. I thought... 9.5 years? Man, that's the biggest liar I've ever heard. Now, how the hell could a guy cut it out there in that rotten jungle? Deal with those lousy people. Meet your responsibilities. Don't steal anything. You got to be totally honest. He hadn't had a hooker now for 9.5 years, and I... That's a drink where I come from, incidentally. Yeah. There must be some generation gap when you move north. I don't know. Anyway, he hadn't had a drink for 9.5 years, and I was overwhelmed with this whole thing. I thought, 9.5 years, what the hell? I hadn't come to AA for 9.5 years. I'd come to AA for a little while. Yeah, I'd come here to get the heat off. I had a hell of a lot of heat on out there in the street, and I want to get the heat off. I want to find some way to control that booze. I want to get back out there and not hurt myself any longer. I want to rejoin my group and my friends, and I want to save them, because without me, they'll probably all die out there, and on, and I just couldn't visualize hanging in here for 9.5 years, but I kept coming back, and I kept going to a lot of meetings, and I've kept going to a lot of meetings ever since, because I've learned a long time ago that my salvation isn't going to AA meetings. Whether you've been around 1 week or 25 years, it don't make any difference. If you don't make the meetings, you just don't make it as far as I'm personally concerned. Life, living, the pursuit of happiness, sobriety, serenity, anything I'm looking for out there in the street, I'm going to initiate it right here in AA by total attendance in the meetings. In the beginning, I soon found out that the program was truly just a 24-hour program that you took care of this day. And I learned, by golly, that you got to cut it down a little more as far as I'm personally concerned. I got to take care of this moment right for what it has to offer, getting all of it I can right now. Man, if it's going good, get her. If it's solid, why, it'll get, things change down the road. But by hanging in there and taking care of this moment, I stand a damn good chance that the day will take care of itself. And will the day come the week and then the month and the year, and before you know it, why, 25 years have run by and it's gone that fast. It really seems just like yesterday. I'm sitting there in them early AA meetings wondering why I'm there. Because as I mentioned, I'm not overjoyed over the fact that I'm an alcoholic going to AA. I thought, what the hell, of all the things it could have been, why am I an alkie? I come from a family of heavy drinkers. Big family, heavy drinking family. All my people drink today. I was the only alcoholic in a whole rotten family, and I thought, why have I been given the cross to carry of the lousy outfit when I'm the best, man? No question about that. As an alcoholic, you have conversations with yourself, and... And you say to self, well, who's the best guy you know in your family? You are, Norm, yes. And why do you have this thing, this alcoholism? Well, it's my family's fault, obviously. They created the problem. I'm an Irish-Italian. Born in East L.A. No wonder I got a lot of trouble. And I don't look like any of them, you see. That was another problem. But being Irish-Italian, I soon learned that all that's really going to get you is that you're not too bright and you talk a lot with your hands. That's all you're going to get out of that, yeah. It's going to make you an alky or it's not going to make you an alky, you see. Coming out of East L.A., L.A.'s a city, and that's all it is, and you know it and I know it. Hell, you can get out anywhere you want to get out of. If you want it bad enough and you're willing to make the sacrifices to get it to do it, you know that. I recognize that I am alcoholic, and I figured this out myself, that I am alcoholic because I drank too much. And I thought, what a giant decision that was, yeah. Here all this time, I thought it was the people and the places and the things, but it wasn't that. No, it was the booze that I consumed. It was me, because I'm the guy that drank the booze, and I'm the biggest problem I've ever had, and that hasn't changed, because no matter where I go, I'm the first guy to get there. Yeah, nobody gets there before I do. No, if it's going to get screwed up, I'll take care of it. I've never needed any assistance. I've been able to react and overreact to every situation out there because I'm an overreactor. I'm a rationalizer, a justifier, a compromiser, and I got a rotten attitude. You don't need any more than that when you get right down to it. I had all that qualification before I ever took a drink. Traveled half the world in half my life. I made a complete ass of myself. I spent money I didn't have buying things I didn't need, trying to impress people I didn't like. I sat around them gin mills night after night, and I drove them Cadillacs up and down the bar night after night after night. Talked in millions, spent in thousands, and never had a five in my pocket. When people said to me, what do you do? I said, man, I do it all, buddy. That's what I do. I'm the general manager of the universe. That's what the hell I am. Don't you forget that. A lifetime of impressing people with a sense of well-being I never had. I go out and get in my car, roll all the windows up and drive away to make him think I had an air conditioner, Typical of the alcoholic, huh? A lifetime out there being all things to all people, and all he really wants to be is be himself. When I got to AA, I found out a fringe benefit. Other than sobriety, I found out I could live out there on that street and all I had to be is me. That I didn't have to justify my existence. I didn't have to compromise my life. I could just be myself, and that is an experience. And if you're new here this evening, by golly, give it a shot. Get that package, man, and take it on out there with me tomorrow. And let's both spend a day out there on that city street just being ourselves. It's an experience that no alcoholic should be without. Tonight, to tell you just a little bit about me and what I was like, I told you a great deal. I'm a guy with an attitude problem, and if you got an attitude problem, you got a lot of trouble. Life and living is a matter of attitude. You got a rotten attitude, you got a rotten day. Work at it real hard, you can parlay it into a week or a month, and I took care of it. And in 1962, I had a rotten attitude all year, and I had a bad year. Yeah. Bad program, bad year. Matter of attitude, isn't it? My bad attitude started getting me in trouble, and I went to the can the first time in 1939. I wasn't drinking in 39, I was stealing, because I'm a thief by trade. I am an alcoholic by absorption, I suppose that's the way you put it out. Opened up the midnight auto supply in the San Gabriel Valley. My business was car business. Started out popping them hubcaps, you know. Moved from hubcaps and started getting radios, heaters, spotlights, and carburetors, anything you lift off a car. Then it got to be a job to gather up all that crap. We just stole the car, you know. Oh, God, overnight that business really got going, man. Loved it, Jesus. Loved every minute of it. I had no conscience. I felt if you're jerky enough to park your car out there, you're asking for trouble. What the hell? That's... But it's an unfortunate situation. It's an illegal program. And there's more policemen than there are thieves, and the inevitable happened. I got picked up and went in front of the man, and the man gave me 7 years in the old Whitty Reformatory. I didn't spend any 7 years out there. I was pretty lucky. Some juice got in. I assume it was that my family had some juice working. I've never known an Irish Italian that didn't know somebody that knew somebody that knew somebody. You know, yeah. And so the next thing I knew, I'm out on the street. Now, I wasn't overjoyed over it. I didn't thank anybody. I just felt they were late. You know, I shouldn't have been out there anyway. I was that victim of unusual circumstances and rotten judges and bad policemen and, you know, all of that that went with it. I'm still out there now looking for the answer to living in something, some fantasy land out there. I had no change of attitude. I had to report to the probation officer. I'll never forget, you know, the first probation officer that said, son, why do you steal? And I said, because I like it. And I couldn't think of anything else to tell him. You know, it was very difficult to explain to somebody who's never tried it, the experience of it all. The feeling you get when you've hooked a man's car and you're driving away and he's running after you, you know, man. God, it's an exhilarating thing. Your heart comes right up in your throat and you break out in a cold sweat and you live and you die for 10 seconds, you're on it, you know, man. I really get excited just talking about it today, frankly. So it was very difficult to find something to replace that attitude. Well, that fantasy land I was looking for walked into my life in 1940 and happened to be booze. It was 40 or 41. 41, I believe. I know it was Easter week down in L.A., and Easter week in L.A. is a big time. Everybody runs to the beach cities, and they get drunk for a week. Well, there I was no exception. 1941, if that's when it was, I went down to Balboa Beach, the Rendezvous Ballroom, Stan Kenton, and Padre Beer. That's where it got going. Mad. We drink that old Padre and get a little buzz on, go in the dance hall and dance with them dollies and act four times drunker than what we were and breathe on the girls, you know, you got to let them know you got a little booze out there. Young high roller coming into Balboa. And a fun time. That was the big bands, and it was a, you know, kind of a fun thing. If it wasn't Balboa, it was a cotton club down in Culver City, the Trianon in Southgate, the Civic in Pasadena. It was a fun thing, and I'm not an alcoholic. A lot of guys thought they were alky the first time out of the chute, and I'm sure they were. But I wasn't. I worked at it. Man, I went from Padre beer into Rainier Ale, the old Green Death, and from the Green Death, a shot into whiskey. And let me tell you, when I got the whiskey, I found it. To me, whiskey was the greatest thing made since money and girls. Man, whiskey got you downtown, and it got you downtown now. Jesus, and I want to be downtown, and I don't want to mess around now. Jesus. That whiskey gets your attention, I'll tell you. Yeah, man, I broke in on that 10 high, and that shows a dedication. Yeah. That 10 high was rotten, boy, let me tell you. That baby burned, going, and coming. You know, when you're young and you're training out there, how it'll come up on you and it runs out your nose, makes your eyes water a lot. But I hung in, man, yeah. That's important. If you're going to be an alcoholic, you don't give up because you throw up a little, do you? No. You just stay in there. Sure, there's a lot to be said about that cheap whiskey. When you throw it up, you don't lose much, yeah? Wouldn't that be hell, you out there drinking that $10 bourbon and flashing that, $10, there she goes. Well, anyway, there was kind of a change in my personality. Yeah, the whiskey started to lead a little bit of trouble now, starting to get in a few jams. And I was up in the state of Oregon, broke into kind of in a minor way into the construction business. I was also dabbling in the car business. And I got picked up, and I got a rider out of state. A man told my story years ago, and it's out of my home group. He said, if it was too big to carry, I laid down beside it and claimed it. And that was really the story of my life. Well, I left old Oregon, and I came on down to... I was working up there around, Corvallis, Philomath, Blodgett, and I had to leave. Came on back to L.A., and by now it's January 1942. And I'm in a hell of a jam because I violated my probation. I went to the probation department. The probation department gave me a break. They said, you can go on the service, you can go to jail. We really don't care. One way or another, we want you out. You owe us some time. You can give it to the Navy or Army or whatever you select. So I had been in jail. It was a bad deal. I decided to go on the service, and I went in the Navy. And that was another bad decision I made. I got in the Navy, and all the enemies I had in L.A. had joined the Navy the same day I did, you know. I've always been a guy that reacted to authority and the Navy's authority, and I got in, and I got in just one jam after another in the 4 years I was in. I had a deck, a summary, a general court-martial. I had 11 and a half months in a Navy brig up there on the top of Goat Island in the middle of Frisco Bay. I had 70 days solitary confinement on bread and water, some captain's mast, some other miscellaneous things that are important, but all directly due to booze, yeah. My discharge came up in Christmas Eve of 1945, and I left with a honorable condition discharge. And the only reason I didn't get a kick out of BCD or something worse is, like most alkies, I'm a hard worker. And I think you can say that about 95% of the alkies. You know, they're hard workers, but they got to be. An alkie's got to work 25% harder than anybody else just to stay even out in the streets, you know. The best day an alkie has is Tuesday because he missed Monday. Man, he goes like hell out there, doesn't he? Because you got to get that heat off. You got the heat on all the time, so when you're right, you got to go like hell out there. The story of my naval career. And I came out of the service, and I came back to L.A. in 1946. In 1946, through the grace of God, that moves in strange and mysterious ways, and no matter what you do or you don't do, it's going to work out that way anyway. In 1946, I heard about Alcoholics Anonymous. Kind of a crazy deal. 1946, I got... there's a rotten town down home called Pasadena, and I made a profound statement in 1946. I said, I'm not drinking. I'm not getting drunk in Pasadena. It's a rotten town. They got a bad judge there, and they got some bad policemen. They got an alarm system goes around the city limits, and when I cross over, it goes off. It says, he's there, get him. You know, they got me. I got 4 arrests that year. I got 2 502s and 2 plain drunk. I'm on a year, 3-year probation on a year suspended. He gave me a year, and he suspended the year, and my probation stipulated I couldn't go in a place to serve to sold alcoholic beverages. And so I was determined not to drink in Pasadena. Obviously, I'm half smart. I said, don't drink in Pasadena. That's very easy, right? Well, it went going pretty good. 2-3 months passed by. The inevitable happened, you know, and it was going so good I couldn't stand it. I'm drinking in a beach city about 70 miles away one night, and while drinking, I began to think. That's a bad deal for an alcoholic. No, you should think or drink. Don't do them both at the same time. Oh, no. Oh, I got to thinking about that rotten judge, that lousy town, free country. I'm a veteran. Rationalize. There you go. Well, the next thing you know, hell, zing, I'm back in Pasadena. Yeah, I'm down to a joint called the Green Terrace, got a big load on, met a buddy of mine, left the trap, closed it, on our way to an after-hours joint in Eagle Rock, and before you know it, I couldn't have gone a half a mile, and a car made a left turn in front of me. I can't see it. I'm so damn drunk, I hit it, and I ran from the scene of the accident because I was frightened. And when I woke up in the morning, I was in my usual position. I was in jail in Pasadena. Yeah. I went down in front of the man, and the man said, you know, I have no recourse but to get you off the streets, or word to that effect. And he sent me to the city jail, and in the city jail in 1946, I shared a cell with a man who was going to Alcoholics Anonymous. God moves in strange ways, huh? Here I'm back in a city that I say to God, I'll never go back to again. To hit a car, to almost kill 4 people. I'm in on a 501 felony, drunk driving, hit and run, bodily injury involved. But for the grace of God that I didn't broadside that car at the rate of speed I was traveling, I'd have killed them. I know that today. And when it gets so tough today, I don't think I can stand it. I say, God, give me the strength to let me remember when it was tough out there. Let me remember the night that I busted that car and thought that I'd creamed those people. Let me think and let me remember. And how many chances are you going to get out there, huh? I don't stay sober from the fear of it. Wouldn't a guy be a damn fool not to remember that he's been awfully lucky, huh? Well, through his directions, I end up in the can, sharing a cell with this guy going to AA. He planted a seed in 1946. In 1946, though, I didn't want anything to do with AA because I was not that alcoholic. I was that heavy drinker. I was all the other things, but I was not the alcoholic. And I told him, I said, Sullivan, it's different in your case. You and your brothers are rotten drinkers. You ought to go to AA. You don't handle it. You know, I drank with you, and I drank with your brother John, and you know, you're crappy drinkers. And you're old. Good God, man, you're 36. What the hell you got left?
Yeah, I believed it then. I said, hell, you're over the hill. You really haven't much to contribute to anybody when you get to be that old. Yeah, I've eaten those words several times, I'll tell you. Yeah. You really don't get it on till you hit 54. That's the God's truth, I believe. But then I felt, you know, that life had run by and it was good for him to go because he needed it. He went his way and I went mine. Now, I walked down that road another 8.5 years and I consumed a hell of a lot of whiskey in that 8.5 years. But you know something? Periodically through that 8.5 years, he used to wonder about old Sully and where he was and was he going to AA. And then in 1954, in February, I'm getting up off the floor and I'm walking in and I'm picking up a telephone and I'm calling the information to find out where AA is. And they give me a number and I call LA Central Office. And then the Central Office in Los Angeles, I say, you don't even know a guy named Sullivan, do you? I got to get to AA. He says, I know a hell of a lot of Sullivans. It's a Irish allergy. You know, do you know his first name? And I couldn't help him. I'd love to tell you that, you know, as we walked on down that road, that eventually our paths crossed, and we have walked the road of sobriety ever since, and everybody lives happily ever after, and I wish to hell I could tell you that, but he happened to be one of that 25%ers. He had 3 years on the program. I ran across him eventually, and then he went back out, and he drank a little whiskey, and he kept flopping in and out of that program, trying to get a handle on the thing, and it kept escaping him. He kept trying to find that thing out there. He tried to recross that invisible line that we know about in AA. And it wasn't available to him. And while he was on a tear one night, well, he had an internal hemorrhage and he bled to death. And that was the end of the story. And his sister-in-law called and told me about it. And it was a very sad thing. It's sad under any circumstances. It was doubly sad because he's the guy that brought the message. He's the guy that planted the seed. I guess he's the first sponsor I ever had. He's the guy that always wanted to kind of walk down to a few meetings with and said, man, you're the guy that brought it in and you're the guy that helped me have those years out there. And we just never got the opportunity to let that come to pass. Well, in that 8.5 years that I speak about, I drank a lot of whiskey out there to qualify for this program. Went to work for one of the largest construction firms in the world, and I stayed with them 11 years. And in that 11-year period, right place, right time. Jobs got bigger and better. Matter of fact, it was up on the Moses Lake job in 1951. Drank all the whiskey that I could find in Moses Lake all the way out to Spokane and Wenatchee and Pasco and on. But you know, everything was moving in those years. God, the jobs were getting bigger and better, and the responsibility and the money and the prestige, and then I had a setback. I met and married a red-headed Irish woman, and she had a violent temper, a rotten disposition, and yelled at me all the time. And you know how sensitive a poor old alcoholic is. God, you're out there for 2 or 3 days drunk, and you come home, and you're tired. Gee, you know, you've been busy, man. You put a lot of deals together, and you've driven that Cadillac 1,000 miles up and down the bar. All right. And when you come home, you walk in the house, you like a little love, affection, and understanding. You don't want that screaming. You're drunk again, you know. Hadn't even smelled my breath yet. Damn walking drunkometer anyway. You know, this thing got off to a shaky start as it was. My bar associates had advised me that if I was going to get married a woman that had a decent job. Yeah. Because now you've doubled your income. If she isn't working, you got a liability. You've taken on a big, giant overhead now. Well, your bar associates are very intelligent people. Well, this red-headed woman had all the qualifications. Man, she's got good-looking legs, and she's got a hell of a job, and everything is going, man. Yeah, for about 3 months it went that way. And I walk in the house one day, and she says, Norm, I've been to the doctor, and I'm pregnant, and the doctor says I got to quit my job and get off my feet. And I thought, you're kidding. Did you ever tell an alcoholic something you don't want to believe? Yeah. Oh, boy. I thought we ought to have a second opinion around here. What the hell? Don't go. Get another doctor, woman. Now, let's don't go off half-cocked. Well, you know, them red-headed women are very stern, you know, and she hung right in there, and she says, I'm quitting the job. And I thought, well, all right, that ain't that bad a deal. This caper takes about 9 months. We'll give her a couple of months to get on her feet. We'll get the rotten job back. Everything's going to be just like it was. Hell, that was 32 years ago. That woman ain't turned a tap since that day. No. Well. She got herself in that shape 8 times. Can you believe that? We didn't end up with 8 kids, but we had 8 pregnancies. It was incredible. You know, every other year, so the locust coming in, zing, here she goes, St. Luke's Hospital, you know. Jesus, I can't hardly make a bar tab anymore. Not only that, I used to sit around, well, how the hell going to keep happening? I'm just not home that much either, you know. Well, you can see under these conditions, I have a tremendous overhead. I've got all of these problems. I got a woman that's continually yelling at me. You know, you walk in the house, she says, you're drunk again. And I'd say, who, me? And she'd say, are you? And then I'd say, do you know who you're talking to? Boy, that got her right there, you know. And then I'd introduce myself to her.
It's necessary for alcoholics to introduce themselves to their wives periodically, isn't it? I'm old Norm, baby. That's who the hell I am, and don't you ever forget that. And then she'd mimic me as only with them Irish women can do it. I'm old Norm. That's who I am. Ha, 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 ha. Yeah. That's very degrading. Sometimes that happens when you got your best friend with you, doesn't it, huh? Yeah, your new business partner. You met him in the bar last night. You've invited him home. And the reason he's coming home with you is, hell, he don't want to go home alone either, you know. He's scared of his wife, so there you stand. Security in numbers. And I say, you embarrassed me in front of my best friend. I couldn't think of his name, you know, yeah, name. And then she'd tell me what I could do with old best friend. And I say, you've gone too far, and I'm really leaving. How do you like that? And she'd go down and throw my clothes out. Then you got to pick the clothes up, you know, you got to save face. And you pack the clothes in and out. You know, the old clothes packing Alky, he's a joy to the neighbors, isn't he? Oh, yeah. Yeah, beats gun smoke on Saturday night, I'll tell you. You put your little show on out there, you know, loading up your cars, got a staggering, dancing in and out of the house, loading up the old car. You know. Yeah, them Alkies are horn honkers. You stand there, honk, 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 you know. You notify the neighbors, I'm going. Never to return. Zing, you're gone. 2 days later, zing, here you come. Yeah, you get tired of sleeping in the car, you tap out. There you come. Driving home on a flat tire. Old rim driver. Yeah, a lot of rim drivers in AA. Tires all chewed up, the sparks are flying off of the rim. The neighbors are running out in the, you know, getting the kids out of the middle of the street so you don't kill anybody. Pull the car into the driveway, up in the lawn, through the hedge, open the door, you fall out, right? Then you get up and you say to yourself, I wonder if anybody saw me. Yeah. Alcoholics are deeply concerned about their reputation. Yeah, got that laying of the hedge. Ain't that something? Guy in my home group here 2 or 3 months ago was talking about laying that hedge. And I thought about one I was laying in Phoenix, Arizona one time. Boy, it is deadly. You know, you're dead drunk and you're laying in the hedge and you're trying to get out, you know, and the hedge is all in you. And you can't get out. And I thought, I'm going to die in the rotten hedge is what I'm going to do, you know. But you get sober and you just kind of get out of it. But it is a delicate experience for an alcoholic. Well, you can see under these circumstances, I did very little drinking around the house. I did most of my boozing in them gin mills. I'm a bar drinker. It's a high overhead drinking. I'll be the first to agree. A home drinker's a low overhead drinker, but a home drinker doesn't get the coverage. Yeah, well, you know, who the hell's around the house to tell how good you are? Her. And her don't believe any of it, does she? Now, you're a bar drinker, you can let the world know how good you are. I like the dark lights. I like the rotten music. I enjoyed the intellectual giants, saying. The giants of industry that sat around there and solved the problems of the world. We built the castles in the air, formed the corporations. Wonder what all the poor people are doing tonight because the big money was there. But I got tired of talking and lying to all my friends that I never met and would never see again. I could sit there and stare in the mirror. They put mirrors in bars so that alcoholics can sit there and stare at themselves. You kind of get that Maybelline look, don't you? Kind of wide-eyed. You just... There I am, you devil, you, yes. It's amazing how good-looking you get after midnight, isn't it? You're wondering why all the dollies aren't there, you good-looking, well-built devil, you know. You're bringing that drink up, you notice your arm, you killer, you, yeah. 150 ringing wet in those days. I couldn't lick my lips, let alone anybody else. That whiskey makes a lover and a killer out of you. You get so drunk some nights you can't remember what you are. You sit there making all them faces in the mirror, lover, killer. That's what I am, yeah. As you gently slide off the bar stool onto the floor. Or you get like I do, you drink yourself up to the point where you mumble. You know, how can you be romantic when that's all you can say? You know. The bartender 86s you. Or you got to make the run to the men's room. It's a pay toilet and you haven't got the money to get in. That's a bad deal. So you got to slide under the door, huh? I bet there's some door sliders here tonight. Yeah, man. Then you got to slide out again, huh? Hell, I never knew till I got to AA. Once you got in, all you had to do was turn the handle and walk out. Ain't that a hell of a note? All the years, I think I slid in, slid out. How degrading for a high roller, yeah. And I walked them streets and lost them cars, and I'm a car loser and occasionally a car finder. I think that's a highlight of my life, is the night that I find the car. Kind of a spiritual experience, isn't it? So you're walking down the street, there it is, there it is. Open the door, get in, go to bed. Yeah.
Oh, car sleeper. There. I'm sure that's why Elkie's got so much neck trouble. It's having her head screwed up under the armrest all night. The door handle in your ear. Wake up 4 o'clock in the morning, you're sick as hell. You think your window's down, but it's up. Yeah. Well. Throw up into your own window. Knock the hell out of your head. Yeah. And then you sit there and roll the window down. Squish, squish, squish. Down it comes. If there's any new people here this evening, you want to give this a lot of consideration because you got to give all that up. Some of the sacrifices we ask of you when you come to Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, you wonder what it takes to get you down. Well, I trudged on down that road, the lottery of my life. The whiskey got every loving thing I owned, meant anything to me. Little by little, it grounded out. I lost the respect of the people I worked with and the people I did business with. Along about 51, 52, we did a big pipeline job in West Texas. 90 miles of line, went from Odessa to Big Spring. Hell of a job, successful, moneymaker. At the end of the job, I got a big load on, and I got in a lot of trouble. Drunk driving from Odessa. Odessa was legal whiskey. I got a case of booze in the car, and I got a jug open side. And I'm 2/3 drunk coming into Big Spring when the police run me over, the highway patrol. And they said something to me, and I said something to them, and then I got up off the ground. We talked a little more, and then I got up off the ground again. But they sent that report back to the home office. And when I went back in, I was called into the old man. And he says, "You'll never leave L.A. County again for this company, buddy. I've been telling you for a long time, you drink too much. You just drink too much and you don't handle it. And the next time I smell booze in your breath, you throw, you're out. Now, get the hell out of my office. You're a disgrace." And I remember that day, as all alcoholics will. The humility of it, huh? Alcoholics could write volumes on humility because we've been humiliated so many times. How I wanted to reach across that desk and I wanted to grab him by the throat and I say, "Who the hell do you think you're talking to, you Johnny come lately? I'm the man that makes the go out there. I drive the line, I do the job, I blow the tunnels. Who the hell are you to tell me? I'm going to quit your rotten company, friend. That's what I'm going to do. Yeah, I'm going out and open up my own company. I'm going to run you out of business, and you're going to come down to see me for a job. Yeah, you're going to walk in my old office. That's what you're going to do, and I'm going to say, 'I remember you. Get the hell out of here.' And then you know what happened next, too, don't you? I had another drink, I dreamed another dream, and I slid off another bar stool. That's what I did. I did nothing. I stood there, and I ate the gall. I bit the bullet. And I said to myself, the rationalization, okay, this time you're going to get away with it, man, but you next time I'm going to get you, next time, yeah. Ah, I got a lot of heat on, I got the heat in the street, all a lot of money, I got to buy that whiskey, I got to have that job, I got to, and so I compromised my life, and I justified my existence, and I went another day, and I did nothing. But that inside, it eats at you. And then one day I drive in my car home, and I'm thinking one more lie, one more promise, old Red's going to let me in. You know, the alcoholic, he'd go through that third act. He's a master at it. You stand there and the tears coming down. I'd go, "Baby, Jesus, give me a break now. Got a hell of a deal, Red."
Yeah.
I'm going down to see the priest. New priest. New pledge.
New parish, yeah.
That's what I'm going to do for you. Think of them kids. Them kids got to have a father, Red. You know, the old schemer.
But then the day comes when one more lie, one more promise, and it's not going to be enough, huh?
I walk in the house, and I'm all prepared to give her the works, you know, telling her about the 4 guys on the motorcycle knocked the hell out of me, you know. Some monster story. But that day, she just says, Norm, you're a drunken bum. You'll never live to be 35 years old. You're drinking yourself to death. I'm neurotic because of you, and the kids are neurotic because of you, and I've spent 8 years sitting here looking through the front room window night after night after night waiting to see your car come home. And night after night, you never come home, Norm. And when you don't come home, I die. And the sirens scream the streets, and I die. And she says, Norm, I can't tolerate it.
I call an attorney.
I've asked for separate maintenance. I put a restraining order against you. I'm divorcing you. I get the hell out of here. And you walk in and you pick up a few things and you stack them in the car and you drive away and you say to yourself, why me? Why me? Why did I do it and why? You know, if you're an alcoholic and you drink enough booze long enough and hard enough, it's just a matter of time until you grind it out, isn't it? The wheels of alcoholism grind very slow but very fine, and all you got to do is give it enough time and it gets every loving thing you got. All you got to do is drink a little more booze, sure.
There's isolated, there's cases where people get in here and they got it going together, huh?
They come in, they got the woman, huh? They're together, a miracle. Oh, a miracle, a woman, you know, they're coming in, they've been, the guy's been out there and he's been boozing out there 20, 25 years. And they walk into the first AA meeting and they're together. And the guy's sick and he's hung out. And you look at the woman and she's sick too. In her eyes is a story, and the story says, you know, this jackass has been tried everything there is out there. Nothing's going to work, nothing worked before, and this isn't going to work either. Now you see the same couple maybe 3-4 months later, and they're walking through the same door of the same meeting. And the guy's cleaned up a little, and he's sharped out, and his eyes are clear, and he's laughing a little bit. And you look at the woman, and in her eyes is a change, too. It's a story. It's altogether different. And it says,
I've been waiting 20 years for this to happen. And finally, it's happened, and today we're happier than we've ever been in our life. And that, my friend, is all made possible through a unique miracle that you and I choose to call Alcoholics Anonymous. And I wish to God I could tell everybody that's here. So that's the way it's going to go for you. That everything comes back. But that isn't what we have to offer in AA. Sobriety and a way of life, and whatever you are, you're going to be better at. And the equipment to stand out there in that jungle and be counted like everybody else. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous is about. We never guaranteed a soul. You drive a big iron or make a ton of scratch or live in the big house on a hill, or your woman's ever going to call you home or your man, whatever the case. No, this isn't what we have. We have the sobriety and a way of life. These are the things we have to offer. But you have to reach a particular point in your life, a moment of surrender, a day when you're sick and tired of being sick and tired. And you say, when does that come? How the hell do I know? It comes to each individual at a different time. It comes when you lose the respect of yourself, I believe. I don't think a guy made this program that had any self-respect. I think you got to drop that out on the street. A man walked into my life one day, he says, Norm, you've abused the privilege of owning. He took it away. He took away the respect of myself. I could look there in the mirror in the morning and wash my face, and I got to hang my head, because they can't stand to look at me. Hell, I know I can put it on. I'm every man jack in town out there on that city street, drunk or sober. But it got to the point that that don't mean anything anymore. What people know about me doesn't mean anything. What people know about me today means absolutely nothing. What people knew about me then, it got to the point that it wasn't much. But what I knew about myself was a great deal. And what I knew about myself was so lousy, I couldn't tolerate it. And that became a psychological second of my life when I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I got up off the rotten floor and I walked in. I picked up that telephone and I called the central office in Los Angeles. And the guy says, you got a drinking problem. And I assured him I did. And he says, do you want to do something about it? And I said, yes, I do. And so he gave me some phone numbers and I started calling. And pretty soon I got a hold of the guy. Guy came to see me. Yeah. Hard-hearted sponsor. You know the kind. Went to school for hard-hearted sponsors, boy. His attitude about AA was, if you didn't want AA as bad as you wanted a whiskey, you got no business being here. He said, I'm going to tell you something right now. You need us, and we don't need you, and don't you ever forget that. Yeah, you went to any length to get the whiskey, son. You lied, you cheated, con stole, walked any length. He says, you got to go to any length to get this program. He said, if you think I'm going to pick you up and take you to meetings, you're crazy. You got a car, you drive. You haven't got a car, you take the bus. He said, I'm going to tell you something right now. You got a car. What are you doing in AA? People own cars, watches. Yeah, you got something to sell and buy more whiskey? What the hell are you doing around here? Just about to tell you something else. Here recently, the last 2 or 3 years, we've been taking chances on guys that own cars and watches, and some of you guys are making it. And he said, that's all right. I'm perfectly willing to meet you at 3 meetings. Old hard-hearted sponsor. By God. And I was thinking to myself, if that rotten old man can make it, anybody can do whatever's got to be done. And I got that curiosity about AA, and I want to prove to him that, by God, I can drive my car from there down to the old Temple City meeting. The Temple City meeting in those days met down in Rosemead, and I wanted to show him I could make it, and I wanted to show him my car. I wanted to hit him with it. That's what I wanted to do, yeah. So it was a God-directed thing. I didn't go there, not by myself. The old shooter was there. He kind of guided me on down. Went in spite of him and in spite of myself. I pulled into that Temple City meeting down there and into the parking lot, and there he's standing in the parking lot, and I was totally amazed. And I thought, my God, he is here, because I really didn't think he'd be there. I parked my car, he walked up, and he opened the door, and he put his arm around me, and he took me in and introduced me to a lot of people, and I loved him from that day until the day he died. And my sponsor was a hell of a controversy out there on the street, let me tell you. You either like him or dislike him. He had a very difficult time with the program. He didn't have a difficult time with Chapter 5 and the 12 Steps, and he was a tremendous individual, tremendous speaker, carried the message to thousands and thousands of people. The number of lives that he affected, I couldn't even calculate, couldn't guess. But he had that one thing, I guess, and it's only a speculation, a calculation on my part. He refused to turn his will and his life over to the care of anybody totally. Chapter 6 was something that he just didn't get into. And as I say, it's only a speculation on my part. I'm not really sure that that's the way it is, but resentment started to form, and the resentments ate him alive, and he had to go out and drink some whiskey. He either had to surrender the total package of the program, or he had to drink a little whiskey, and so he drank a little whiskey. And he stayed out there for almost 12 years, and he flopped in and out. And that ego that the alcoholic has, that I have, you know, wouldn't let him stay. His ego kept saying, I'm the guy that carried the message, that did the job. I'm the guy that had the 8 years, and I lost the 8 years. And he couldn't buy it. And then one day he had a heart attack. And physically he couldn't cut it anymore, and he came back in. He had a year and a half of sobriety. And in that year and a half, he and I had a lot of conversation. We talked about a lot of things that were necessary and a lot of things that weren't very necessary. And I loved him very much. And he was the greatest sponsor in the world because he was my sponsor. He's the guy that took the time out on that Sunday afternoon to sit there and talk to me. He's the guy that took the time out to meet me down there that Sunday night, that old Temple City meeting. Took me in, as I said, and introduced me to a lot of people. Very wealthy group, that Temple City meeting in those days. 80, 90 of the finest drunks that ever came out of the San Gabriel Valley. We had so much money in the group in those days, we had donuts before and after the meeting. Can you believe that? Yeah, we had a lot of jelly donuts, them red jelly donuts. Gosh, you know, we'd have a half a dozen or so. Expensive donuts, save them for new guys, though. Them red jelly ones went to new people. Yeah, you see a new guy comes through the door and he's all green and hung out. And the red jelly donut committee would slide right up on him. Yeah. You know, the sense of humor of the alcoholic is warped. Yeah, walk up to that poor new guy. You're standing there and you're all hung over, you know, and he says, "Are you new?" You know, I bet you'd like a donut, wouldn't you? I don't know whether you ever looked at a red jelly donut or not when you got a hangover. It makes your teeth itch, I'll tell you that. It looked like something I left on the street last night, you know. Got you right, the donut, thanks anyway. And then they all stood around in groups, and they all talked at the same time about different things. Ever notice that, AA? Yeah, and every time somebody gets to the punchline of the story, sings. Some guy interrupts him. God, you spend years in AA waiting to hear the end of a story. When you're new, you hear that keep coming back, and you think, man, that's why. I'll hear the end of something around here. Alcoholics are exceptionally rude people. And then the meeting began, and the guy stood in front of the group, and he told everybody what a jackass he was. They were hysterical over the fact he was going to jail all the time. People beating him up all the time. Drank something called Jamaican Ginger, give him the Jake leg. Crippled him up to bed and put him in the hospital for a couple of months, and they were out of their chairs. Well, God, that's the funniest thing they'd ever heard. And my sponsor's a nudger, they all are. So they're going, "Did you hear that? Did you hear that?" What the hell, you're not deaf. They got you in the front row. If he's not doing it, your wife does. Listen to that, Charlie. That's you, right there, yeah. I'm hearing the whole thing. Sure, I can hear what this guy's talking about, but I lost identification. I'm not that bad. I've been around a little bit, but I ain't that bad. That guy been 70, 80 jails. What the hell? I've been in 25 jails at the outside. And I drank a little Vitalis once in my life. What's that? I got no story. I got no qualification. I thought, you know, I'm right. I'm too young to be an alcoholic. I'll go back out there on the street. You know, I got a lot of boozing to do out there. But that man and all the talkers I ever heard in the early years, they always made damn sure they qualified it. They brought it out. They took it out of the book. They said it don't make any difference what you drank or where you drank it or how much you consumed or how old you are. It's what it's doing to you. He said if it's tearing up any part of your life, you don't have to go any farther. And when he said that, he got my attention. And I thought, yeah, man, it's tearing the hell out of my life. I'm not so sure I want to quit drinking, but I'm so damn tired of hurting myself I could spit. And as I looked at that guy that night, I knew one thing for damn sure. I never had to hurt myself again if I didn't want to. Alcoholics Anonymous is a program of example, is it not? You like what you see, you're going to come back to see some more. That cliche went around, you know, I heard it hundreds of times. What he is speaks so loud, I cannot hear a word he says. By example. That night, an example, 9.5 years of sobriety. A street man out of L.A. I savvy them streets. I know what he's talking about. He said, I came out of them streets. Only he came out of the tougher section than I did, I'll tell you. 125th and Figueroa, down in that area. He said, I crawled for it. Yeah, and I get to thinking, maybe he can do it, I can do it too, huh? Because he's been there so far. But as I look at that guy that night, the thing that I was so impressed with, that he wasn't the street man, no. This guy's a man. He's a man among men who is clean, who is sharp, who is happy, whose eyes are clear, who laughs a great deal. He's got on a set of threads. I bet the threads cost a guy 100 and a half. And I thought to myself, man, if he didn't get nothing else out of AA, didn't he get a set of drapes? Boy, that's all right. Yeah, stick around a little while. Maybe they got another issue going through or something, yeah. I'm impressed with the thing that I see. And the fact that that guy, his problem compounded by the fact that his woman had divorced him and remarried. And all the kids, they hated him. But he said one day he bought the package of this program and his kids came down to see him and they learned to like him, to respect him and love him. And what I look around that night, what do you think I see? I see big, tough AA guys sitting there crying, tears running down, and the story was told. I've heard it hundreds and hundreds of times. They laughed because they were miserable, and they cried because they were happy, and they called it Alcoholics Anonymous. And you say that's oversimplification, but that's the only program I got. It's the program that I got to operate with. Through the laughter of the program, I could extract and move out the wreckage of my past. I could get it the hell out of there. And it was difficult to laugh. I, like all alcoholics, when I first came into the program, what the hell is there to laugh about? I'm sitting there and they're all laughing. And I told my sponsor, I'll go to your rotten meetings, they ain't laughing. You had my trouble, you wouldn't laugh either. Man, I got a lot of heat on, a whole lot of money. They're foreclosing me out of a new house to build up on the side of the mountain there in Monrovia Town. They had a finance company. They want my car. That red-headed woman, man, she's got that attorney of hers, and they are all over me down there, yeah. And that boss is trying to can me. Yeah, you. What's so funny about all of that? No. But in spite of myself, I'm sitting there in the meeting one night, and I'm going, God, I did it, you know. Yeah. Don't tell my sponsor I laughed, whatever you do. No, I want to be miserable all the time. But it's very difficult, isn't it? You keep going to meeting, it's in the air. You can sleep, it'll permeate you. Yeah, you find yourself, God, yeah. But through the laughter comes a release, comes a moving out, the wreckage of the past. Taking that monkey off your back. An alcoholic, you know, we carry an ounce of guilt like a weight 1,000 pounds. You know, nobody carries guilt like an alcoholic. You know, guilty, God, you know. But through the laughter, I'm able to move that guilt out. I'm able to start to forgive myself. I'm able to go on and make the amends and tell people I'm sorry. Start to work the steps. I'm able to forgive myself for the amends that I can make, too, huh? The people I want to go home to see and are not around anymore. The lies that I've affected. Year after year, you know. Go home and see my mother. She'd break down and cry every time I'd leave. And every time, you know, I'd promise. I'd say, baby, Jesus, don't cry no more, baby. I'm going to straighten it out. I'll be like the old man. I'll be like my brothers. I'm going to knock the booze off. Pretty soon. Later on. Tomorrow, baby, I'm going to get that done. You know that. And tomorrow. Never saw me out of a jam. From the time I was 13 till I was 27 years old. In and out of one scrape after another. And then she was killed in a car wreck down in San Diego 2 years before I made the program. And so when I came into the program, they said, make the amends. At the top of the amend list, there she is. I want to go home. And the physical sense isn't there. And I made that cross bigger than is necessary, didn't I? Because the Serenity Prayer, we recited it tonight. It said, accept the things you can't change. And I couldn't change that, could I? For all the money in the world, the prayers, my right arm thrown in, this wreckage of the past, I got to get it the hell out. I got to know in my own head that, man, nobody goes forever. Someday they're going to hang me out to dry, and I'll make the shot, and I'll check in, and I'll say, what do you say, baby? I'm sorry for all the crap and the trouble that caused you before, but I got a hell of a lot better after you left. Because I met a group of people, and they call themselves Alcoholics Anonymous. And through this, I could forgive myself. I could move out the wreckage. I could start to get a handle on the program. I could make that giant transition. I could start giving and quit taking. And that's tough for me because I'm not a giver, never have been. I'm a taker. I'm a taker of things and a user of people. I'm a loser. All takers are losers. But as my sponsor told me, buddy, you cannot have the total program until you make that transition. Until you give, Norm. And there's room for everybody in AA, Norm. You got to give for the hell of it and want nothing in return. You didn't buy it. You can't sell it. You can only give it, Norm. And the more you give, the better it is. The end result is not something in a material sense, but in a sense of well-being, I'll guarantee you the world. You can pick up the ashtrays. You can make the coffee. You do a good job, we'll put you on the coffee detail. Yeah, you're politically inclined, Norm. We'll run you for secretary and guarantee you the job. That's the kind of guy I am. You want to go on for there, central service, general service, institutional work, or carrying the message to the guy that's still hurting out there. That's where it's at, Norm. Going out there and sitting with that alky and pouring it out. 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning, and you're talking to him, and he's hanging in there. And this is a lucky night because he grabs it, and he gets it. And he starts going to meetings with you. And a year later, he's standing up in front of a meeting. He's getting a cake. It's got one candle on. He blows it out. And he looks out there at the audience, and he says, there's a sponsor. There's Charlie. That's my sponsor right there. And if it wasn't for Charlie, I wouldn't be here. He'd save my life. And as humble as we alcoholics are, huh? Yeah. If you're the Charlie he's talking about, huh, how that lump comes up, and I don't care how tough you are, the tears come, and you say to yourself, yeah, maybe I did. Maybe I did help him a little bit. And maybe now he's going out and helping another guy. And when he does that, he's not only going to leave a little of himself, but he's going to leave a little of me, too. And so he and I and you and they and them are going to walk on down this road, aren't we, from here to eternity, giving a little of ourselves to other people to get in another day. To help themselves. And to me, that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. And we can elaborate on it for hours upon hours, but when you get right down to the bitter end, that's what it is. And that sense of well-being you feel as you're sitting there in that meeting and you know you helped the guy to help himself. That feeling that comes over you and you want to scream to the world, I helped him. Jesus, what a feeling that is. That's a feeling I tried to find in that whiskey, that sense of well-being I found in that booze. Yeah, I'd feel good for a while and start to get that buzz on, and I'd hit that plateau and I'm buzzy all over. I'd order one more just to stay even. Zing, down the chute I'd go. Yeah, and when I woke up in the morning, the buzz is gone, and in his place is a friend of mine, and you knew him. His name was Remorse, wasn't it? He walked in every day. What do you say, Norm? He tore my guts out. That's what the hell he did. And I traded in that sense of well-being, which was a temporary thing, for the sense of well-being I've been able to experience today. And all I've had to do is be willing to give a little for the hell of it and want nothing in return. And I'd love to tell you that from that day forth, every day's been a holiday and every meal's been a banquet. But that isn't what they guaranteed me, as I said. In Alcoholics Anonymous, they promised me a way of life. They promised me a sobriety. Whatever I was, a ditch digger, I'd be better. They also said, Norm, you're going to have the good days. You're going to take them. You're going to love them. You're going to have the bad days, the heartbreak days, and you're not going to like them, but you got to hang in. And we're going to give you the program, we're going to give you the book, and we're going to give you the steps, and you're going to be able to lean on that. And maybe the day's going to come, too, when you're going to cry that poor mouth. I've done it time and time again. 1962, man, what a bad year, 62. Let my ego rule my good sense. Got in a lot of bad trouble. Made a lot of bad decisions that year, yeah. I got financially involved with some people downtown L.A. I'm from downtown, but they were from downtown, you know what I mean? Yeah. Let me tell you, they ate my lunch that year. Yeah, financially, I'm in the worst shape of my life. 1962, 8 years sober. Man, I can't hit a lick. Everything I touch turns to pucky out there. You know the kind. I got a bad program going, and the next thing you know, I got an honest desire to take a drink. I got the Arab thirst. All year, I got it. I got that, yo, Jesus, I got that thirst. And the ultimate end with the bad program going, I find myself sitting in the gin mill. I was down in Florida on some business. And I'm sitting in a gin mill there in Miami Springs, and the bartender comes up and says, what do you have? I says, a double. There it is. And but for the grace of God, the old shooter upstairs didn't find it necessary to snap that angel off my shoulder. He gave me another shot. He took me back and let me remember who the hell I was, where I came from, what it took to bring me to that point in my life. He may have said, Norm, quit standing there crying the poor mouth, man. You think it's rough. Remember 46 was rough, huh? Remember when you creamed the car and thought you killed the four people? Remember laying in that tank in Big Spring, Texas, and the cockroaches are running over your head, Norm, huh? You remember the people that your family that you saw year after year, and they broke down and cried each and every time you went to see them. Remember, Norm, you directly affected the lives of a minimum of 20 people when you come here and found a better way to live. And in my life, there's 20 multiplied by 20 I've heard used or abused who booze, alcohol. So remember, everybody gets what he can pack. He cuts them crosses to size, the old man. The big ones always go to the big horses, and the small ones always go to guys named Norm. Yeah. It ain't so bad that it couldn't be worse, buddy. At the end of the year, we had some personal family heartbreak, grief, disappointment, whatever you call it, but it wasn't as bad as it could have been. And I forgot to remember the important thing, to say thank you very much. Thank you for what you gave me, man. Thank you for the 25 years and 4 months that you let me have. The 25 years and 4 months you let me walk out there on the sunny side of the street. Hell, I know guys that died, never saw 25 days. They walked the street of booze and fantasy, busted dreams and broken hearts. Yeah, they went out hard with the heat on and the screws down. They went out justifying their existence. So, hell, I'm overpaid. I haven't had to justify my existence out there to nobody. I get up in the morning, I go out on the street, and on the street, I'm respected because I was clean yesterday, was clean today, and God willing, I'm going to be clean tomorrow. And I'm respected not only by myself, but by other people. I'm able to do a job, perform. I'm able to make commitments and keep them. I'm able to go home at night to a house, and I live in a house, and in the house is a woman. She's my woman, and she's glad I'm coming on. She's a red-headed Irish woman, and she respects me because I'm her old man. And nobody cries in that joint because their old man is drunk and tearing it up. And I ain't heard a kid of mine scream at me for years. And I watched you go from small bandits to big ones, and I've sent my boys to schools. And I watched them get some education, and nobody in my family ever cut it that far into the higher thing for whatever that's worth, you know. Taking sorority and beer and all that crap that goes with it. But I've had the opportunity to put them out there. And I've taken all my daughters downtown one by one, and I bought them their first pair of high-heeled shoes. Huh? I watched them move, you know, from the chickens of my life to the women of my life. And I stood there and I've watched the transition. And I've cried for the joy of it. And they've cried too because I'm their old man. And I see all them jerks and jackasses come around the house and take them out. Yeah. They get jerkier every year. I'm getting older. I don't know what the hell it is. And I walked them down the aisle, let me tell you, too. And I've heard the music play, and I see them chickens come out all dressed in white and come and grab me by the arm and start to cry. And then they make me cry. And I walk all down the aisle, and I look out there at the audience of the church, and there's, you know, maybe 300-400 people, or maybe 70-80 of my Elkie buddies, all big, tough Elkie guys sitting there crying. You know, them Elkie guys cry best of all, don't they? Yeah. Man, they're crying for the joy and the love, the feeling that one Alky's got for another. And I take her on down to the altar, and I give her to this jackass. I really cry then. Man, yeah. But I'm very lucky, you see, because all my son-in-laws, they all work. They all take baths. Ain't a bad deal, huh? I got one of my son-in-laws a dentist. I got my own personal dentist. I don't even need an appointment, and I never get sent a bill. Ain't that a deal, huh? And I've been walking in the middle of the night with phone calls to say, how are you, grandfather? You got another granddaughter? I could go on and relate the miracles this program has brought me, but I could never find the proper words. How the hell could I tell you that every loving thing I am today is because of AA? or anything I'll ever be is going to be because of the program. Hell, it don't take a mental giant to figure it out. When I got here, I had nothing, and nothing from nothing leaves nothing. Every loving thing I'll ever be is here because of this program, and I'll guarantee you one other thing. It's been a hell of a walk from the L.A. County Jail to the point that I stand today, and but for the grace of God, Alcoholics Anonymous, and friends like you, I could have missed it all. Thanks a million. God love you.